Blog Talk Radio.
Yay, I'm back on the air. Oh, God, I saw my daughter when I said that. Okay, so, yeah, I'm super excited that Melody and Medina were on the line with me. And I don't know if you guys got to hear us after the show ended, but I got some really good friends, and I'm happy that I have them. I'm blessed. So, Medina's going to be calling back in a minute, and I told Melody to do the same thing. But we just touched base on just growing up in Portland. Melody's actually from California, and she relocated here, and she was basically mentioning that she was going through some custody battles, and she saw the power of community showing up outside of the bureaucratic system that we call social services. And then we were also talking to Medina, who was born in Portland, born and raised, and her family has a lot of civil rights history within it. And she's on the line, so let me pull her in. Okay. Hey, Medina. Hello, Medina. Hey, can you hear us? I was just basically giving an overview of what we just talked about before we were cleared off the line. Is that Melody?
Correct, Melody.
Okay, hey, Melody, and I got Medina back on the line, too, so I got both of you guys here. And thank you guys for calling back in. Like I said, it's a brand new show. We got technical difficulties. Left out later. Your talk about some of the issues, because I know Medina had, what was you guys at basically said it. Do you remember what we left off at before our technical difficulties happened?
Are you talking to me, correct? Right?
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
Okay, well, don't worry about it. So what I wanted to ask was, what you guys at our institution, see your phone, loud noise.
Hello?
Uh-huh.
Hello?
Okay,
yeah,
I was saying
I think, oh, okay.
Who is that?
This is Melody.
Hey, Melody. Is that your, is there a background noise?
Oh, I am at the store. Is it really bad?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, call me when you get out the store. Me and Medina will hold it down and then just call back in.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll go outside.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I could, well, we can hear you clear right now, so no big deal. But I wanted,
okay.
I just wanted to say that we were when we were on the line before we ended for our break and got back on, we were basically going over our experience of what we could do. We had power in our community, which is people power. And Melody, yeah, call us back when you get settled, because that outdoor noise might be turning off some colors. I don't know. But call back.
Okay, well, I'm just going to go outside because I do want to say something real quick.
Oh, go ahead. I'm going to let you have it. Go ahead, Melody.
Okay, so I just wanted to say that about the, you said, bringing in the old school. I do think that now generation, you know, how we're not allowed to discipline our children in a what they want to say, a physical form, it's not allowed. And I think it's very harmful for our children and our community to not get that type of discipline. Because back in the day, you know, we used to get spankings. And for me, with me getting those spankings, you know, like, knock on wood, I haven't been to prison. I haven't been to jail. I do things, but not to this form of where it's criminality, you know. And for me, getting that spanking really helped. So, like, it's really hard as a parent not having, like, I do have some community, but not having, I think, the old school parenting, you know, and allowing our grandparents that are in the community to come support our mothers and fathers that are raising our children in this population now is really important, you know, and getting more advice and information from them and really taking heed, not just saying, oh, okay, I got this, but really taking heed. Because right nowadays, we don't got parenting. You know what I'm saying? We're stumbling.
Okay.
And our children are constantly getting shot up, you know?
Well,
and so
you,
I'm really passionate.
Say, Karen, Yeah, the parenting programs they have now is we got a parenting program. You can get a gift card if you come, and here's your certificate and buy. And there's really not any useful skills within that system, you know?
Right.
And you're right. We had elders back in the day that would basically minister to the families. They would talk to the children. They'd talk to the adults. They would give them respite. We had grandparents that would keep you for the weekend, and aunties and uncles with basements. But the thing is now is that our current society that we live in, we don't even have our brothers and sisters within proximity to us. So we don't have, you know, our extended family. And that's something that we understand as a community, but we're going to have to build that extended family within our network. You know what I'm saying, Melody? Like, some of the groups of people that we're with. Again, I'm going to talk about intention. We have to be intentional.
Well, I mean, I definitely think, and I am going to get off in a couple of minutes. But, Ms. Teresa, like, I definitely think, you know, how you guys have those little forms and people filling out paperwork. I think there needs to be a votary of saying, hey, we need to bring this type of, you know, discipline back. And in a structured way, not in a way that it's going to abuse our children. You know, but I really think that it needs to be back, because if not, we're not spanking our kids and putting them in time out and, oh, sit down, little boy. It's not working, you know,
no, but
and our kids are going out getting shot up.
Well, let's talk about, because I know that you have to go. Medina, what are your thoughts on what Melody is saying?
Me, myself, I believe in discipline in a different form, like, talking and leading by example, because I myself don't spank my kids, and I have my grandchild living with me. I've never spanked her before. She's 7. She respects me and respects her elders, because they know you give them that eye we used to get from our parents, mm-hmm. and they know. But, you know, it's got to be shown in the home, because there's no respect out, a lot of respect outside the home. The teenagers and stuff, or disrespecting the elders and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, I'm not saying whipping your child is a bad thing to do. That's just not a form that I have used, but I've heard from elders that if you don't whip your children, the police will whip them. And so I did take that into heed, and then I've also heard you don't hit people you love. So I also took that in heed and just grew from what I felt and feel is best for my family. So it's different for everybody.
Every child is different, most definitely. You know, but, like, I'm more thinking of those kids that are, you know, coming out, you know, of the system that don't have that structure. You know, sometimes a spanking is okay, not all the time. Like, me personally, I don't, you know, spank myself. But I do think for parents that do need it, you know, it should be okay. It's a result. Like, if there's nothing else working and they use all those forms, you know, they
mm-mm.
shouldn't be, their children shouldn't be removed out of the home, and the parents shouldn't go to jail for doing that to their child,
right.
You know?
Well, that, again, and
love.
That, again,
if it's out of,
if it's
out of abuse.
Well, again, that's why I said we need to build, like, since our communities are not, we don't have the grandmas and the aunties to help with the giving them the
right.
eye and the sitting and the giving you
right.
time and all that. But what we
and
can do is
you.
We can learn our history. We can understand why certain types of discipline might be reinforced by the things that are happening in society. Let's say that you just, you know, mildly spank your child because he's a boy, but if he's a black child, he's leaving the house, and when he goes into the education system, and when he goes to the playground, and when he goes to the store, and everywhere he goes, people are looking at him like they look at me as a grown black woman, like I'm a criminal. So this baby, he just
right.
hit, told him he did something wrong. He walks outside, and society is telling him that every day anyway. And so it's not helping better. Well, I'm just saying, because in our society, since we don't have the reinforcement of our family, he's not going to
mm-hmm.
get it because of it, and that's where we have to make an intentional change, because we got to save our lives. I was thinking
right.
about what Michelle was saying as far as some of our cultural aspects on this issue with our children, and I can tell you, I do a whole lot of Smithsonian digging. I like looking and reading about our culture. I like going through our photo albums. Okay. Let's say you watch that movie, 7 years or 12 years of slavery, any of those movies, you see the brutality that the people in those plantations went through.
Oh, should I have to take
my grandmother
some?
Was a sharecropper. She grew up on a sharecropper in Louisiana. And
okay.
She would tell me about that. And the thing is that...
Martha, I'm going to go. I'm going to go.
Okay, bye-bye, Melody.
Okay, bye. Bye-bye,
but,
you guys.
Love you. Bye-bye. But it was the beating was a mechanism for controlling. It was the parents was doing it because they didn't want to see what the master was going to do to their child. They didn't want to see their child have to be lynched or beat or whipped. So they were doing it as, I'm going to hurt you because what he's going to do to you is going to be worse than I do. And I remember when I was a kid one time, my grandma said, you know what, I'd rather do it than let somebody else do it. And I was like, what is she talking about? You heard me.
You know?
You know, so I think that a lot of our cultural understanding and the things that we see as values, and even if it's violence or it's pain, is because of what we had to do in order to survive. You know, I can imagine being...
So is it better that discipline come from a loved one or a stranger?
Yeah.
I mean, what is better? Isn't it... I don't want anybody... disciplining my child physically. So why would I have someone else tell someone, and I'm doing it? That's like, you know, I know we're in a different time, but children have a voice, and that's what was mothered was our voices as children. And so we raised our children to be vocal and show their emotions, and now they're just out of control. So where do you start to get that respect back? It has to be a different way than whipping a child. It has to be through education.
Well,
it has to be, you know, self-love, period. And so I guess I'm just more of a spiritual, come from a more spiritual point. I know it's the otherwise for the child. But with me coming from a background as a child of any kind of abuse, I didn't want to pass that down to my children.
Exactly. And I think, like, when we talk about the role of elders in our community, and let's say that we're talking about the Black Lives Matter era, these are the conversations we need to be having. I know, like, right now, of all the protesting and everything else that we've done in the streets, this is an open platform and forum for people to start getting into that. And I'm talking about our people getting together and having those conversations and bringing it up in your congregation and having a Friday night where you don't have to worry about getting the grant to have the conversation. Just invite everybody to bring a pot and look. And then, you know, just put the food on the table, kids and the families, and just have the conversation. You know, show a movie about it and have a conversation afterwards, but do whatever you can to intentionally bring people together and to deal with these issues, because there are people that are like myself. We're not going to stop protesting. We're not going to stop organizing. We're not going to stop being active in our communities, because we understand the power of breaking down bureaucratic BS. You know, we know that that helps the people that are out there responding in a different way. We know that it helps them by leaps and bounds, because it brings forth funding opportunities for their organizations. It brings back credibility to the work that they want to do. It brings back opportunities for the work that they're thinking about doing. But if they're not working in partnership and in unity with the community, then it's all for nothing. And we're not out here just because we want the exercise. I used to think it was cool at first. I'd be like, okay, this is working. You know, we're out here getting exercise. But we're exercising our rights, and we need to use them. We need to use them both ways. But to make some difference.
The community starts at home, and a lot of us didn't have that. And so you have to start from, you know, you have it in your background and your family, but it just like I do, but it stops. And then you have to light it back up, you know. It's hard to light a fire that has been smothered. It's hard to light it back up.
Well, we beat down on ourselves a lot, and we always, a lot of times, we lose hope too quickly. And I was going to say that one of the things, when we were growing up in Portland, Medina, our grandparents came up here together. They lived in Vanport, had kids in Giles Lake, and moved to Northeast Portland. So they had adventures together. And, I mean, you imagine, like, 3-4 generations back doing all that stuff together, growing up, having a family. But look at the dynamics of how a family looks back then. Like, I have 2 children, right? You know, at the most, my friends might have 4 or 5. But back then, they were having 10 kids. So, of course, you got his family. Of course, everybody at grandma's house and da-da-da-da. But, again, that's one of the reasons that we're not together. My grandma had 15 kids. That means all 15 of her children are grandparents, and they all have all the kids that their kids were doing. So you got these individual silos of families that all came from one family, but we were so much in that nurtured environment that we feel like we've lost each other. And I'm just saying, like, because of all this Black Lives Matter, you know, even if you're not in politics, I hear people every day talking about, well, I'm not political. Well, the Black family is a political structure. Get political.
Yeah, I'm so, like, the first last person to be political, but I'm for family. So, you know, there are people that have credentials or degrees that can say and do better or say what they point across better than me, but that doesn't mean that I shouldn't be active.
Yeah, they just, I mean, everybody's going to be active in their own way, and I'm just thankful, like, for the work that your family has done. Let me go ahead and just let people know that it is okay for you to call in on the line, and I'm going to say that a couple of times because we want you to know that this is a call-in show. There's a number that you can call in on. It's 516-666-982, and I'll put you in on the line as I'm able. But don't be afraid to call in if you want to chime in on some of the things that me and my co-host, Medina, are talking about tonight. But I wanted to say, like, so your Aunt Mariah Taylor was at the first rally that we had outside of our first protest back in August of 2014. Medina, did you know that?
Yeah, I've seen that. She told me about it, and she showed me pictures, and she talked highly of you. And, yeah, she's been helping me get things and put things together for my sons, Amir. So, yeah, she's always active in the community.
Absolutely. Well, I wanted you to talk a little bit about her because she's one of the elders in our community that has nurtured my growth and that I have been able to look at as a mentor. And so I just wanted you, because that is your family, if you can tell us a little bit about the history on her that you know of, because she's given us some very valuable assets in our community.
Well, of course, you have the health clinic, Mariah A. Taylor, by Jefferson High School for, I don't know, it might have been 20 years. I'm not sure of the exact years, but she's a nurse practitioner, and she's active in the community and in church very strongly, and she's for family. And so she told us together, you know, with a lot of family meetings and family dinners, a lot of holidays, and so I learned a lot of my community and my family orientation from her, you know, so I started having the dinners and, you know, the Sunday dinners and doing stuff like that to bring our family closer together, because that helps you when you feel like you're strong with your family and got that bond, then you're able to reach out, and you can't do too much when you don't have a backbone, you don't have no strength. So she's the backbone to a lot of different groups that she's active in.
Absolutely. She's amazing. I was watching this video from the first meeting that we had. My friend Joanne Body had basically recorded us at Dawson Park last year. And I was looking at the video because I was walking around taking notes and typing stuff on my phone and trying to be in two places at once. But everybody that was speaking into what we're dealing with right now, like, they built the movement that day in the park for our city, and everything that she was saying, boycott this and don't do that and da da da. I was looking at the video for, you know, historical content and understanding, are we on the right track? And I realized that everything that most of the people that were there, mostly everything that they said we needed to do, and I mean community action planning at its best, is what has been happening.
Yeah.
And it's because we're not trying to hinder the relativity of our causes. We know that community violence is because of poverty. We know that that root cause has a lot of different sections attached to it. And without the experience of our elders giving us the knowledge of how it works against us or how we can work against it, we'll be starting from scratch if we don't get that from, you know, from the horse's mouth, because the life experience does a whole lot more for you than that going to school, getting that PhD or that CPA or that ESQ or whatever you want as far as your letters and your, you know, your credibility factors. I think just
your life. There's nothing like wisdom coming from the elders of your family. Her mom, which is my grandmother, she I listened to all those stories from the early 1900s, you know, of her them growing up in Texarkana and moving to Vanport. And, you know, this, my grandfather almost getting lynched, and so they had to run to Portland, Oregon, to have a life. So, and my grandmother had 14 kids also, which, you know, she just passed away a couple years ago. So that was very sad. But, you know, she lived a full life. She was 90-something. I think she was born in 1909 or something like that. So she lived a full life. She had to suffer through, like, 10 of her kids dying. So that was hard. But she was a strong Black woman, and she passed it down.
Absolutely. And I know, I was going to say, I met Shep, too. You know who I'm talking about?
Who?
Shep.
Say it again.
S-H-E-P, Mariah's dog, your grandmother's stuffed animal.
Oh, my God. they got you in the family for real.
Girl, you folded in a memory. I keep all my love in my heart. Anything that I'm around that's precious, I'm holding on to it. So I'm that shit one time. Makes her happy, and I know that grandmother happy. So I was just thankful that I got the honor to meet him, and just to be with her, to love on her, and to receive what she had to give us. I was gonna say, brought up the civil rights history of your mom and everything, and I know that your uncle, Esau Sansadine, had created a lot of artwork in our community.
Isaac.
So did you want to go ahead and talk about that a little bit? Because you know that we started protesting, not just because of the community violence, but mainly because of the violence against us, you know, perpetrated by police officers, the law enforcement, and, you know, service. In our nation, and I know I don't know if you might want to talk about what I know, but about your life experience in that whole situation. But if you would like to share that, are you open to talking about those things?
Well, I mean, of course, coming from Portland, Oregon, and being African American, we experienced a lot of this injustice. My father was murdered when I was 3. So by the hands of law enforcement. So I, in Portland, Oregon, of course, and then my Uncle Isaac, he, and in his pictures, he portrays some of the life of our family. It comes through in his portraits, like he painted some of my father and my Uncle Khalid, and then he painted the mural that was on the Albina DHS office at one time. I believe they took it down now, but yeah, he's a professor, so an art teacher, I mean. But yeah, the stuff that we had to experience as a family was very hard. A lot of the men in the family had got caught up in the system, and so there wasn't a lot of fathers, a lot of brothers, a lot of nephews around, most of them incarcerated, some still to this day. Not short sentences, like 10, 15, 20 years, you know. I'm still waiting for something to get out. And so they just fell into that trap. So,
yeah. How do you feel about the activism that's happened over the last year in reference to the police brutality and, you know, like what happened to your father when the police murdered him? How does that make you feel personally about the uprising of youth addressing that issue?
Well, they're doing a good job from what I could see, but there's still a long way for us to go. Now laws are being passed that we can have our, you know, concealed weapons in certain states on our body. So I don't know if that's going to bring more crime or less crime, you know. But,
yeah,
I'm just really concerned more about the lives of the generation that we gave birth to, you know, because they're lost, basically. And So it's our duty to put them on the right path, and it's very hard to do.
It is. What do you think our role is in this movement? Because, you know, I work with a lot of youth because they're the ones who have run to receive the movement and to build it and to do what they need with it. So I don't mind being their secretary or manager or whatever you might want to call the role that they've provided for me to serve. But what do you think that we can do in order, you know, what are some of your ideas? Because we have them now. They're looking to our generation for guidance, and we have to look to our generation for bridging that resource to provide them.
Well, they need consistency for one, because don't nobody want to be told that you're going to be there for them, and then when they need you, you're not. So our children's generation don't take that. They want action now, and they need stability and frequency with what we're doing, and you are, you know, consistent. So it shows that you're serious, because some people do something once and nothing happens and then they quit. And you've been going out this for some years now, and I think that you're a great example. You're showing a great example to our children and their peers of what to do when you want change.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I don't want to be the, you know, like, I'm not, I don't think that I'm the only one, and I don't like
I don't
to
know.
Feel
you,
that
you,
way.
I mean, no, but you're one that I know. You know, I don't know, you know, who you know, so, and where, I know where you came from, so I'm very proud of you, and you're doing a great job, and there's people that we, of course, that you're on their shoulders, you know, that helps you get where you're at, but, they didn't force you. You're doing this willingly. This is in your heart, and you loving what you're doing. And so that's what I was meaning.
Well, I love you, and that's why I do it. I mean, if I didn't have that capacity, I couldn't do anything. So I'm just thankful to be able, and you know that. I was going to say there's a couple of anniversaries that are coming up this year. And, again, callers, if you would like to call in, we have a number. It's 516-669-8226. And we're live on the air. We're talking about the relationship between our movement that we have here in America happening, the Black Lives Matter movement, the movement for Black unity, and our leadership and the lessons that they can learn from the elders. What are the gifts that our elders have that are yet to be passed down, that are transitioning and being passed down now? One of the things that I was going to say is that when we did the Trayvon Martin rally back in 2012, one of the things that prompted me to do that was the leadership of people like Hank Miggins. You know, Hank passed away, but he used to work in Multnomah County. He was a part of the Citizens Review Committee that deals with, the internal police issues. He did a lot of things in our community above and beyond the call of duty as a civil rights leader as well, sitting on different forums throughout our state, like the Oregon Assembly for Black Affairs. But just moments over coffee on things that he assessed would need to be done by our generation were some of the ideas that I grabbed onto, and I figured out how do I need to use what he's telling me to do in the medium in which I exist, you know. And so sometimes what I'm just trying to say is that we have those messages coming at us every day. And people, what you have to do, I'm going to use that word again, intentional, what you have to do is you have to be intentional about grabbing those phrases and using those words and spending time with those elders so that you can really adapt yourself to being humble enough to receive what is going to be necessary down the road. Because I got into my, I'm not going to talk about age, we got into some higher numbers, right, Medina? And started thinking about conversations I was having with my uncles and aunties when I was in high school. And I would think to myself, like, damn, I wish I listened to that entire conversation. I wish I actually listened to where I could go back and get every word for word, because some of the phrases that were in there are so potent that had I really paid attention, I think I would have been so much, you know, stronger, you know, so much more capable, so much more conscious. So that's, you
well,
know, even
my, my family members started doing was talking to my grandmother before she passed and take the conversations. So they have that on record. You know, that's one thing that
probably needs to be done so you can reference back to it. Gives us a lot of stuff to remember.
Absolutely. I was looking at my great-grandmother's photo album, and immediately I thought to myself, who in our family is old enough to know who all these people are? And what
right.
is the photo if I don't know what happened in these stories that they took pictures of, you know? And so, you know, even that, putting the kids together
yeah.
with the grandparents and go over there and get the book with Granny and take the pictures and make a scrapbook. That's why they had us doing those things, so that they can get an opportunity
mm-hmm.
to know who we were. It's funny. It's funny, girl. So what are some of the things you got going on, you know, for the MLK celebration? Like, what are your thoughts today? I mean, I realized this January is the 30th anniversary of the Dr. King holiday becoming an actual holiday in America, with all the David Dukes and everybody trying to stop it. Back in 1986, that's when they made it a legal holiday. And so we're in the 30th year. What do you remember Portland 30 years ago, Medina?
Of course. Yeah, I was a teenager. You know, it was more freedom and, you know, not as much. I mean, of course, the gangs was all around and stuff, but it felt more free, you know, to do and go out in the community than they do now. There's so much crime going on. But the Martin Luther King holiday is a great time and a good day to express and come together as a community. And I don't know what too much will we do there, but, you know, I'm in North Carolina now, so it's a lot more.
Well, too much about the holiday, but as much as the time, because you say,
yeah.
like, let's think, when I say a King celebration, we're celebrating something that King did, right? You get where I'm coming from? So 30 years ago, when they decided to create the inception of this holiday and say, okay, well, we're going to celebrate the King holiday every year. We're going to go ahead and do volunteerism in honor of Dr. King. There had to be a certain climate in America that made us feel like we were at a place where we were celebrating the work of people like Dr. King. You know, like, what, you know, I know that we had maybe...
Well, I feel like they wanted to pass the baton on, because when he started, which... Of course, there are people that came before him, but he was more publicized. Still to this day, that's what we learn about in school, is Martin Luther King. So if you don't know about him, then you're not listening. But so I think that the baton was passed on, and it needs to be more solid than what it has been. Because we got off track with all this other gangs and, you know, drugs in the neighborhood and stuff. That was a vice that was used to keep us off track. So
but
our children are
time, so somebody hold on real quick. How long ago, let's say just in the estimate of thought in years, was it that the crack came out and gangs became violent in black communities?
I would say 1989, 1990. That's when from my experience.
It was starting to start off a little earlier than that, because everybody started, like, I want to say everybody started getting pregnant by gang members like in 85, all the way through 88.
Yeah, you're right.
That could have been about 30 years ago, right?
I was so young. I didn't experience the devastation of it until I grew up a little bit, you know, 13 or 14. Then, you know, people in the community was getting killed and they were strung out on drugs. But I was so young when it started that I didn't know what was going on. By the time I understood it was in full swing.
Girl, well, it's funny because I was looking at the January episode of Ebony Magazine, 1986, right, 30 years ago.
Yes.
And it looked like black people were doing so great. Like, every page was, like, amazing strides in American advertising. Like, every picture is glorious. You know, the hairstyles and the clothes and the alcohol beef eater on the rocks with a lime and all kinds of fly shit, right? And so
sure.
I'm like, whoa, we smoke pools and we drive cars and we drink Heineken and we buy life insurance and all this shit. And we even put in TCB curls and all this other stuff, but... Where's all the pain and destruction and oppression and black-on-black crime and crack and all that other stuff, right? Because if they're celebrating this holiday and we're doing so good,
how did the celebration and the holiday and the Rainbow Coalition and all the good shit that came that same year, 30 years ago, turn into crack and mass incarceration? You know?
Because we didn't build from that momentum. Other people built from that momentum. Other races did. You know?
Yeah, Medina, the momentum was propaganda. Look, I'm looking at Mondo, you know, my brother, he got all of the newspapers from back in the day, right? He kept all that stuff. All of that was propaganda. They had advertising that was being paid by major corporations that made black life look really good and happy. And then they immediately turned into programming that criminalized what black people were. They already had black exploitation movies that was coming from the 70s, but by 86, they were changing the paradigm of what the black American family looked like up until the point
that we got. Well, because they used that to pacify us, to get us thinking a certain way while they was doing something else under the scheme of things. So,
you don't have to watch no more. We forgive you and you forgive us, and now we're united and we're happy and we're cool and stop tripping. And then all the resources were pulled out, you know, and crack was put in. So I'm just saying the elders have an understanding of that. I'm going to bring it back, but the elders have an understanding of that. We have this King holiday coming up, and I'm just saying, like, some of the things that I'm thinking about is that we're going to have to celebrate black history for a whole year. I mean, this whole year in activism has to be about dismantling our historical propaganda and the things that we believe to have happened and to be done or finished, and the things that are actually in reality not done, not finished, and just an insult to our civil liberties and our human rights. Like, we were bamboozled. And I know that
you're right.
The first time somebody said that, but we have the evidence. Our history shows it. You grab a 1985 newspaper, and you're not going to believe that we're living in 2015 or 2016 with the issues that we have. It's a very good...
Well, like I said before, I don't believe that we, as a people, we were together and then we were broke apart. It took it a long time for us to get back together as a community, and it's hard.
Yeah. But we got sleepy. We closed our eyes. We didn't stay woke. We thought that when we got the Black American honored by a national holiday, that everything was great, and we had made it, and we didn't have to struggle, and we didn't have to compete, and that we were going to have equality, you know, and all that other good stuff. But equality turned into equity, which is like a return on investment. That's how people get paid. It has nothing to do with your social justice. That's a hustle.
Well, they tapped into that, and they made the money, and we did it. Well, they just gave us the scraps, as usual, and we took it and was happy. And I'm not happy with scraps. I want the whole meal, the dessert, and the drink. And so I teach that to my children and my grandchild. And so to not accept nothing less than what you're worth. So.
Well, I was going to say that one of the ways that we can fix that, again, is through that relationship with our elders. They know what happened. And if there are youth that are out there on the front line right now in this generation, oh, my goodness. If they're out there willing to do the work, tell them what they need to understand so that they can do it righteously, so that they can actually understand where they're planning and their strategies. They know what they've been told. But even in our elders' own capacity, they can start dismantling the things that are happening. It's not a competition. We all got work to do in our own capacity.
Everybody's
to come out here and lead these children. The children have to be able to become youth on their own.
Right.
They have to be able to deal with this, and they have to be given the tools, not the direction, you know. You don't tell them what to do. That's to stop us from moving, you know.
Right.
Give them what they need in order to develop those things. Give them the motivation. Share that history, you know.
Have to have some action.
They like
action. They want to see the action. They don't want to hear it. They want to see the action. So, you know, you've got to be an example, and you're very active in your community, So,
I'm just glad that
that we have a community. A lot of people, I'm hearing it all the time, we don't even have a community. We don't have a community. Well, that's because I didn't have 15 kids and you don't have 12. You know,
right.
We just got left and we're in a different area, but we still know each other. And intentional community is relative. Build it. You got it. Get somewhere. Deal with it. You know,
yep.
Have a family at the church. Have a family night at the rec center. Figure out what a family life a night looks like. Don't wait for an organization to open up a center that might not open for 5 years and takes 500 meetings to make happen. Meet
right.
at the park. Go somewhere and do something with people. Call them. It's a whole new year. It's January 2nd, 2016. We got 366 days in this year, so you got an extra day to do one-ish.
Right.
You know,
there you go.
We got to do more stuff if we want to. I know some of my friends are on the phone, on the line listening, that I wish would call in, like Tamber Lee, but she probably don't want me telling people on the radio that she knows me. But I was going to tell you, I was on the call earlier with the teacher from Willon, from over there in Northeast Portland, and there's a whole lot of things that are happening in our education system right now. And one of the things I was going to say is that it seems like it's a fight for, I don't know, we definitely know that it's gentrification. And I was going to say, Medina, you came back home because you had moved to Texas the same time I did. And
yeah.
You ended up a little earlier than me, so you kind of knew about the dynamics that was happening here in Portland. And I'm just one of those people where we all got to, even when our parents wasn't together, we all knew each other from school. We knew the habits of each other. We knew, like, a lot about each other just because we were at school all the time growing up as friends. And then when we got in the community, we got to get closer. But what are some of the things that you noticed coming back to Portland with your children after having them in school? You know, because you were in Texas. And that was a different community for us because we weren't from there and we didn't have family. But what were some of the things that you noticed right off when you came home? What was it like? Because I can't even imagine.
I came back in 2005, I had 5 children with me.
Yeah, what?
At the time. All 5 of my children were at home. I only got 2 left. But I noticed that there wasn't any programs. There wasn't any community, anything for them to do. So eventually all that was available for them was the streets. And me telling them not to do something did not help. They still did it because, you know, they have to have that experience. But I feel like if there was more community and more programs that my children wouldn't have, some of them wouldn't have got caught up in some of the things that they did. But yeah, I just noticed that we were further out. We weren't in Northeast Portland anymore. I stayed in Southeast, of course, and eventually I ended up moving back out of Portland like almost 2 years ago because of that. And my son still ended up getting caught in the system. But yeah, there's not, we don't have an olive branch. We need people to link together for us to be better.
That's right. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I couldn't imagine bringing my children back to finish school here because when I got here and I saw what was happening, I was like, whoa, that's not how we grew up. That's not what we had reading. We had everything. And we still didn't get
Mr. Booth. Who was Mr. Booth? Mr. Booth, when we used to clean up the streets. I forgot the name of that program. But, yeah, we had different programs to Miss Collins, the little daycare thing. But, yeah, I'm sorry, getting off track. But, yeah, we have more programs than they do now. There are no programs there. And everything costs. So.
Mm-hmm. And then everything, again, we talk about gentrification, we talk about equity, and we talk about the disadvantages. One of the things that we've been working on in this movement is to break down the state-sanctioned discrimination that we have here in America. That basically creates the value through legislative and constitutional language that says that our lives don't matter. And when your life doesn't matter, of course, you have to have a gatekeeper that protects you because you're not able to protect yourself, right? Or protect the for the commodity that you are. And in America, we didn't end slavery. We just have a black commodity system. And it's here in Oregon, there's no way out of it unless you break it down. Like, we can't say that reforming these systems that exist right now is something that we would want to do. If it's that inherently malicious and corrupt and unethical and lacks that much accountability and there's zero oversight, you don't want to reform anything like that, because reform, it kind of gives you the impression that you're going to make it better. And if that's how it works, we don't want that to be better. We want to destroy that and build and bridge something different. And that's why I think it's so important that if we take the mechanics of our world seriously, we can realize that bureaucracy is just not necessary in all forms. We have 2016 coming up, this 2016 election season. In Oregon, I think our legislative session is only about 38 days for the whole year. I think, I'm not for sure. And that's bad, because that means that a lot of movement in the state capital that could be beneficial probably won't happen. And that's not a problem, though. It's not a big problem, because there's a whole lot of people that are running for office. And so one of the things that I want to say is that in honor of Dr. King and the dream, in order to make the reality of what we're dealing with, whether we were propagandized or not, the way to win is to inform yourself about what this civic engagement means, what does political action mean, what is happening with the laws in my community, what access do my children need, and start articulating those wants and needs and bringing them to community planning meetings like the ones that we have, or even bringing them just to this radio station, so that we can start working with some of the people out here who we've elected to write the language behind those things, or to say that as a person that's running for office, these are the things that I'm going to stand for, the things that I'm going to develop. Because the thing that I do know is that we have an abundance of resources, but we live in a society that has segregated us and said, well, for you guys, we only have this. Well, guess what? We're under United States of America, so I'm going to take all the things that I need in order to build an equitable situation. But if I don't use my voice, if I don't use my hands, if I don't use my feet, if I don't put my mouth to that person's ear, then it's not going to happen for me. Because the person that's speaking on my behalf probably got 100 people speaking at him, and he's only going to take 3 messages that are honorable and going to keep him his job. They're only going to take those 3 messages to the people. And so we have to just start getting into the mindset of being our own messengers and using this political season to get those messages to these people that want our vote. And I know that we can kick back and say, I don't vote and I don't want to, but you know what? Trump, the Trump dude, oh, my goodness. Pushed for 8 years, so I don't know why people think Trump can't be the president. He can buy it. America is a corporation. Come on, he can buy a business. He tells everybody all the time, I got businesses. I buy them, my cars. So come on, don't act like it's a joke. We know that's the reality here. So you better get what you need on your local level. And, you know, get some people that have integrity, that whatever happens on that national level, that you have some strength to breathe, you know. Because it could get bad if we get the wrong people in there.
Yeah.
You're right. Do we just break politics?
What were you going to say, Medina?
I said, you're right. We got to vote and be active and able to get the results that we want. But a lot of people feel that they voting doesn't matter, and that vote's not heard. The president's already picked. And, you know,
you think the vote is where you stop. They think the vote is the beginning and the end, and it's not. It's sitting, it's getting those. Oh, man. In Oregon, we'll go to them even if we don't have an appointment, because it's called civil disobedience. Okay, but we know the process of getting the appointments. We know the process of organizing forums to get the people there in our face. And we know that they're running for elections, and that there's going to be debates and forums and all kinds of speaking engagements all over the country, basically. But in our state and in our city and in the things that we have to deal with locally, it takes a calendar to get access. Get the calendars, because I can't do all the work. I'm not going to keep kicking the streets and telling everybody what to do. I'm going to use this radio platform to tell y'all the direction that works for me and some of the people that I've helped and that have helped us. So
start finding out who your legislator is and just look at what committees and boards they sit on. Like Lou Frederick, as the state representative for the district that he was in, he was on the education committee. He was on the committee for DHS. And I have friends that had children that they were working through the foster care system to deal with, and they knew Fred, and they didn't, I mean, they knew Ms. Frederick, and they weren't contacting him. I know parents whose children were having issues in the education system, and they didn't know that they could contact him. But once they were able to, they didn't, you know, there wasn't a boundary. There wasn't bureaucracy. They knew that at that point they could call him on this is what needs to happen, and they had to know that he could either respond to them or he could respond to the Senate and do something with it. And when nothing happened, guess what? Or if nothing happened, guess what? You could be gone. Like, really?
Right.
Like, people don't have to vote you in to be the senator because you no longer want to be the representative. We could say that we don't want you at all, and we can get our own people in there, because guess what? To be qualified, there's very small eligibility requirements. But I would rather have somebody that doesn't have a lot of political experience but has a lot of integrity in the street, in that seat, representing me. And you don't have to be a rocket science or a lawyer to be a politician. And I think that that's some of the things that people don't realize. You just have to be a certain age.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that because it's scary. I'm not into politics.
We're going to have to teach people to run for office, and then we're going to help them get elected. Now what? You know, that's the fear factor, is having the ability to have people back you. But when you got such a movement and you have intersectional movements and you have people out there calling accountability into question, and F in corruption and accountability and lacking ethics, that's what Oregon got from the Center for, the Center for Integrity or something like. I wish I could use my Wi-Fi right now. But, yeah, the Center for Integrity gave us an F grade. You can Google it. It's ridiculous. And the documents are linked to the article. But when you have something that bad, you have to do something. You can't just trust that they're going to change their attitudes and their motives and their operational goals and their networks and all of the way that they do partnerships. They're not going to change it. You have to get in there and do something with it. And believe me, they didn't know how to do their jobs before they got in there. They learned. It's a paid gig, you know. Being an elected official in some of those capacities, you can actually earn a paycheck, and you can work for your community. And I think we need that. Regular Joe back there where it needs to go. Joe Walsh for president.
There you go. Somebody that's been there, you know, have the experience.
Yeah.
Talking about it, but never experienced.
Something's happening with your phone where it's getting choppy, and I know you're saying something good.
I said we need somebody in there with experience, not just somebody that's talking the talk, but somebody that's walked the walk. You know, it's different to rehab somebody and you haven't been through it. You know, we want somebody we can connect with and that has history, some of the same history that we do. And a lot of times we don't get that in politics.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we can build it. We can build in our communities. That's a lot of the work that Dr. King and a lot of people were doing. And those, remember, they were under 30 years old, and they were out there organizing and stuff, but they were getting people ready for just that. But my thing is this. When I look at the work that they did 50, 60 years ago, and then I look at our Congress, you can't tell. You can't tell that Medgar Evers got killed. You can't tell that Malcolm X got killed. You can't tell that the Kennedy brothers got killed. You know, you can't tell that all those people lost their lives standing up for justice and liberty and equality with the system looking worse than it did then. One of the first things you said when I asked you about the King holiday was, back then we had, how did it get worse?
Because we have no community and we have no sustainability.
Disappeared in a year. The community disappeared from 86.
Because once we got off track, that's all they needed. And so all those other vices got put in there and kept us satisfied, numb. So a lot of people don't have any emotional connection or common sense to know how to get out of the situation they're in. They feel like that's just a life cycle when it's not.
Yeah.
You have to stand for change and you have to be active.
That's
just like you fight for your children, you have to fight for your community.
You know?
You got to fight. You got to fight. You got to actually fight. You can't, it's not just going to pop itself back into place. You know?
Yeah.
We got to fight. And that's what I'm saying, like the protesting and the activism that we're doing, the fight is at home. The fight is at home. The fight is in the living room. It's in, you know, in the photo albums. It's in that conscious fight that we matter. We can go out and we can tell everybody else Black Lives Matter, but until we're Black Lives Matter at home with
right.
each other, you know, intentionally, in our own way, in our own time, in our own space, if we don't feel like being, you know, in anywhere else, and nobody's forcing people to love themselves. Come on. We're just telling everybody that we were, you know, and we shouldn't have to. It's an insult.
Well, it should show in our walk, in our talk, in confidence. In our demeanor,
yeah.
A lot of us are slumped over. You have to stand up straight with your head held straight. I mean, held up and your chest out. You can't go into something with your head down and slumped over and asking for something and asking for change. People are going to run over you. So, and it takes other people with you. You can't do it by yourself.
Mm-mm.
And so that's what a lot of people make the mistake at is they want to champion. I mean. Bring this movement forward, but they don't have other people doing it with them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think
we got to move.
We just need to come together. You know, it's hard to get the Black community together, but you're doing a good job at it, and people that's with you are doing a good job at it. So,
we're going to keep trying because I know that the people before us, we're not going to let any work that they've done be in vain. That to us is our inheritance, is the continued workload, and we don't
yeah.
want to make it insane. You know, you don't accept the job or start doing it if you don't feel like you can complete it. And like Cal Henry told me, he said, "Well, you know, being a change agent is not a quick run around the corner. It's a marathon. You know, you're going to be in it for a while." And I was like, "Well, I kind of got that because I'm organizing and planning, but I don't see where I get to stop." And so I just have to change the capacity of what I'm able to offer. And I think that, like, taking care of my health and, you know, just listening to the youth that are around me, doing what I need to do to ensure that I'm all right is what's going to be more valuable now. Because if we do 2 hours a night on the radio 7 days a week, that to me is more than I've done. And I was doing 24 hours a day. But that to me could be more impactful. If people are able to get what I'm getting out of the people that I'm with people
right.
that are amazing. I'm in situations that are extraordinary. And for people to be able to be introduced to those elements, I think that they'll get charged up just like I am, you know, because, you know, Medina, I love you to death. I just really appreciate your time, but I've always been inspired by you, you know, and I think that the way that we're all brought together, that's an intentionality from the universe. So we just got to start using that and appreciating it more.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, we come from a hard place, and so we're trying to not make the road so bumpy. We're trying to smooth it out for the people that's coming after us, our children, great-grandchildren, grandchildren, you know. Life is hard enough within itself, and especially when you're trying to fight for equality, you know, it's a hard job.
Yeah. Well, it's going to happen because we are determined. We're very determined. And so I wanted to go ahead and give you an opportunity to put information out there on how we can support Zamira, too, if you wanted to go ahead and and it's up to you, but, we got to get the word out. We did the rally. And I know that he just got him a new attorney. You said there's no call date yet?
January, I don't want to say the wrong date, 31st,
okay, well.
I believe, is the new call date because he just got the new lawyer on the 23rd. Thank God it took months, but, you know, of community help, the rally you held, and my Aunt Marie, there's Nana, Joyce Clark, and a few other people helped out. You know, with letters and sending them to the DA and to the lawyer, to the judge to get his lawyer changed because there was no communication between him and his lawyer. And yeah, just trying to get them out of there. That's all.
Amen. Amen. So if there's, we got to get, if there's anybody out there that likes doing social media and wants to do some things for us, I would love to set up a page that, you know, people can administrate where we can show support events, you know, like let's have a body of people at different places, because I go to court for a lot of people. I do a lot of community advocacy, and it's always hard when me and my client or my friend or whoever we are with each other being there, it's hard to be there against this system. And when I say system, I'm not talking about like Uncle Sam sitting in there looking like the whole system is against us, but even the culture of how you are perceived when you walk into a courtroom or into a boardroom or into a community space where someone is dictating how they are going to support your issue. Let's say that our children in incarcerated situations, or even with our foster care system and our education system, when you're going in there and you have everybody sitting at the table and you know all these people are employed and they're all being paid to be there and they're dealing with you and you're the representative of your problem, it's kind of a hard place to be in. And when you're already dealing with a whole lot of social issues, and really poverty in itself, just poverty can hurt anybody, but dealing with that and then going up against a system that doesn't look as impoverished as you are and might be more intelligent than you are because they got letters behind their names, that's kind of intimidating. So we just need help with anybody that's willing to put together a group page that they can help us create events where we can just have people that are solid and available, save dates and see things that are happening where they can show a presence, because our necessity in this movement is not just when we have protests. That's when we need you there so that our movement and our demonstration can back up the action that we're going to do later. But the action that we do later when we're in those courtrooms, like in federal court with Lisa and like with Joe's court dates and things like that, we need packed courtrooms. We need people to be there to show the humanity behind the issue that they're being presented, because they're not presenting us as people. They're not presenting us as this person has this problem. We are the issue. We are the problem. We are that thing that brought everybody there that day to have to deal with it. And so we come in already with a disadvantage. So humanity is an advantage. Having human people there with us is a benefit. And if you're able and you're listening to this call and you're interested in doing the social media part of that, that's a call to action. Don't Shoot Portland is a community action plan, and we ask people to be a part of it, and it's all of us together doing it. So if anybody is willing to do that, make sure that you are able to hit us up and let us know that you're willing to take that on. And I'm just saying, create the page. You can put admins on there, but we can create a system where people are able to say, hey, my son has court on this date, or we have a meeting on this date, we have an event on this date. I created a page called 40 Days Seeking Common Unity a couple of years ago when my nephew was killed, and that page is still up, so I might need to use that a little bit more often. You know, maybe we can just get somebody to organize posting some of our protest-related events on that page, but we need to be intentional about our outreach and our support systems and building them, because we're in the beginning of what we're doing. We're not anywhere near the middle or the end. We are in the very beginning, and so building strength is power. And that's what we need.
Yeah, so you're right.
Huh?
I said you're right, because when I'm here having a call date or a settlement hearing, the judge had mentioned that you have a lot of family here. You know, you're well-loved, and they don't want to see you going down this road. Usually there's no family here for stuff like this. And so that is important to have family and community when you go to court. You know, because a lot of times they don't have that, especially young black men. They don't have nobody showing up, and that's a hard pill to swallow. And they're sitting in there in that cell, like Zamir. He's just, you know, he said he gets angry, you know, upset that, you know, he don't have a lot of family support. But, you know, like I tell him, his family still loves him. But sometimes, you know, people get caught up in life, and they don't want to stop and be in your space, you know, that you created, you know. So
it's just very important for family to be involved, especially when a family member is incarcerated.
Well, I know it is. Oh, my God. I was going to say that one of the things that hurts me the most about what I've been doing with this activism is the lack of time that I have to be not only with my family, but even with my friends that are dealing with the issues that I'm fighting for that need my hands-on help. You know,
right.
They, like, know personally, and I don't even have time to help them because the issue part of what we're dealing with is bigger than the pieces that I have that are relative to me, you know? Like, I feel like
yeah.
I can help them more on a bigger level if I stay in this game rather than taking time to come over there, but that's hurting me bad. That's the part that's just killing me. And if we had more bodies, it would be easier. Because that's,
yeah.
Oh, thank you. You know, like, they don't have to see me, but knowing somebody care enough to go and to have their back when they call, you know, that's a Black Lives Matter issue. You know, that's
yeah.
how you can help the movement, you know. Help us organize those type of essentials, because that is, you know, sometimes we don't know how important it is, but believe me, if you think about it, you will know. Nobody has to tell you. Shoot. So did you make any resolutions for New Year's?
The only thing I'm really working on for the New Year is togetherness, bringing my family together. You know, I'm kind of working on getting Damir out and getting him here. That's about it. I ain't doing no weight loss. I ain't got no habits that I need to quit. Maybe coffee. everything else is fine. That's about it. You know?
Well, I'm going to be on this one. So.
So what about yourself? What happened?
Girl, just the radio. I'm trying to, everybody tells me, you know, like, take care of yourself, take breaks, and all that other good
right.
stuff. And I think it's like, yeah, if I can make this work, if I can get past my little technical difficulties and I can get my technology in place, I'll do this and then I'll take care of myself. Because if I can still give to the community, and I'm thinking like 2 hours a day, yeah.
yeah.
You know, and even if they listen or whatever, I feel like I'm giving, so. If I'm able to do that, then I'll take care of myself and I won't feel guilty about it. And I don't know where the guilt came from. It seems stupid to say that and it's embarrassing, but it hurts to do that when you're working with such critical issues. It
yeah.
hurts to feel you're able to work on those issues and to take away from those issues to work on yourself, because if you aren't able to work on those issues, you know, then, I mean, you think only an able person is strong enough to deal with them. So if I'm strong enough to deal with that, I don't have to deal with my shit right now, because those things are more important. And that's crazy. Like, it's not. Those things aren't more important for you to be dealing with if you're not here to deal with them. And if the people
right.
that you love in pain because they're seeing what you're doing to yourself in order to try to be there. That's trauma. That is, you know, it's people keep talking about PTSD and, you know, It's not good. So we got to make sure that we take care of each other on that level, too. So that's one of my resolutions, is to handle Tressa, take care of her a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah, well, I need to be doing the same thing, but you know me. And shoot, got the same. We got the same virus, trying to take care of everything else around us. But, you know, that's just, you know, how we're here to serve, and that's what I've always done, is serve. So, you know, it's hard for me to serve myself, because I'm always serving others. And that's what God put us here to do. I mean, we are supposed to take care of ourselves, because we can't serve if we're not here. But, you
that's
know.
It. Yeah, like, stop doing that. Stop doing it. I think it becomes a social habit, and we hear it.
Yeah.
Like, again, you pick phrases, and you bring that stuff into your own social environment. And so some things we have to be mindful of what we pull and pick in. It's not a bad thing to take care of yourself. It's not. It doesn't mean that you're weak, and it doesn't mean that you're being lazy. It just means that you care about the people that love you, and you want to be able to do the things that you feel that you're doing and
yeah.
that they feel are necessary. So I just want to encourage everybody to do everything that you can in life to help others if possible, and to do it with intention. Don't do it because it's something that you feel like it might make a resume look better. Do what you feel good about, you know.
Don't pick and choose things that aren't for you. Pick what is yours and just keep it and make it grow, because we need that from you.
Mm-hmm.
The things good at that make you happy, those are the things that are going to make those paradigm shifts work a little bit more in our favor as far as humanity. So just keep it real by being you. And I just want to thank everybody for tuning in. And we didn't run out of time on the show, but we only had 2 hours, and I ain't going to keep you on the show any longer than that. And I don't want people that have other things to do to have to deal with the interest of our conversation. They can tune in tomorrow for that. So continue to support us. See you in the street. I promise I will get my technology on point, y'all, for real. Just keep listening and tell people about the show and call in. And if you're interested and you have things that are happening that people need to know about, make sure you let me know so that we can promote those things to get them out there. Peace. And Medina, did you want to end with anything?
Just family first, community, and love yourself and love your neighbors. That's about it. And thank you, Teresa, for this forum. And I enjoy speaking on it. You know me, I'm a very shy person, so you got me out of my comfort zone, and it was a good thing. So I love you, and keep up the good work.
Well, we need to hear voices like yours. People need to hear from voices and people that they are not already familiar with, so that we will know that we're not, and we're all on the same page, and we are all human. So I love you, sis.
Love you, too.
All right, peace, and good night, everybody. Thank you for tuning in.
All right, bye, Kate.
Now that I learn how to end the show.